This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For those involved in dealing with cryptids, if any of you are reading this, why do you do it? Other than the money, of course. I feel a lot of you do it for the rush, the adrenaline. But where's the line drawn? Where does exhilaration evolve into panic? Don't get me wrong, a little risk-taking is food for the soul. But so many factors can go wrong in any situation. In particular, what do you do when you find the corpse of a cryptid you've been hunting eviscerated and dismembered? When the abrupt realization hits you that there's a bigger fish? My grandpa wasn't quite on the level of monster hunting, but boy was he a crazy mother effer. Once, he hunted a grizzly using nothing but a crossbow, wet mud and leaves, and his wits. He's had his head mounted above his forest house fireplace ever since. I can't say how far back his love for the wilderness is rooted, but I know he grew up tired of the city long before retiring from his job as a metropolitan engineer. Since then, he lived out in an old house in the northwestern reaches of the Olympic National Forest, almost 40 miles from the park itself, Washington State. I could only imagine how lonely it must have been, living out there by himself, but he never seemed any the worse for it. In recent years, I've come to be good friends with the guy I met in college, Martin. I could see the same fire in his eyes as my grandpa's when it came to the outdoors, always pestering me to go with him on camping trips, going fishing, hunting, you name it. It was a no-brainer bringing him along for a visit to my grandpa's. Honestly, I feared they might get along too well, and Martin would never return with me. In the end, it didn't matter. Because both of us had been ingrained with a morbid aversion to the woods since that day. Martin was particularly eager this time, practically vibrating in the passenger of my Jeep. Last trip, Grandpa promised he'd show him the ropes of skinning and pelts. Martin often went on about how he'd feel sitting in front of a roaring fireplace with the great deerskin rug laid out beneath it. My motivation was simply to check up on my grandpa. He hadn't been responding to my attempts at contacting him for the past week, so naturally, I was a bit worried. We ran into a problem early, driving up the long dirt road to my grandpa's. Rounding a corner, I slammed on the brakes, seeing a slew of fallen trees lying across the road.
"Damn, what happened here?" Martin exclaimed. "There haven't been any storms recently, right?"
I sat with my hands 10-2 on the steering wheel, lost for words.
No. It's been pretty clear weather around these parts since March."
"Weird."
Shutting the engine off, I hopped out of the Jeep. The only sounds were the leaves flittering in the mid-spring breeze. Nature's white noise. We were a little over 2 miles away from the house, an easily walkable distance. Grandpa had enough equipment that we didn't need to bring much of our own, so our bags were light. I had my phone, a flashlight, water, spare clothes, and my utility watch strapped around my wrist. My plan was to get up to Grandpa's and come back down in his truck to chop up the fallen logs with a chainsaw. We thought it would be more fun to go through the woods along the track. A long dirt road only means boredom after all. We scrambled down the left side slope and began our trek, keeping an eye on the road to follow its route. Only a few minutes later, the smell hit us. Putrid carrion. It was nothing unexpected. Animals in the forest die all the time. Even so, that hardwired part of my brain was repulsed at the smell.
Shit, something's fastening out here, I said. Can't imagine how it'd smell in summer.
Martin let out a small retch, but agreed. The stench only got stronger as we moved on. It was at this peak where I almost tripped over a sharp object on the ground. I thought it to be a cluster of branches at first, but the notion quickly dissolved upon seeing their pale, ceramic reflections. A decapitated stag's head laid out in front of us. It was wrong, though. The teeth were too long, and the bone of its face was exposed. Even with the odor, I could tell it was fresh from the vicious black blood that seeped from its neck and mouth. Martin spoke up.
God damn, that's freaky! You think a bear did this?
I mean, there's only black bears here, right? I doubt they could pull off something like this. A cougar, maybe? I don't know. Never seen one straight up decapitated a stag like this, though. My eyes were drawn to a trail of blood, forming a jagged streak ahead of us on the ground. My gaze followed it until it terminated at the stag's grisly mess of a body. Well, it looked quadrupedal from a distance, but as we moved closer, I found I'd been sorely incorrect. The body was that of a monster. Large in stature, but bony and gaunt. Long, razor-sharp claws lying splayed across the ground like kitchen knives, and all covered in patches of dark, wizened fur.
Is it bad?
Martin called out, approaching from behind me to get a look. When he saw it, he went still and quiet as I had. There was no statement that could do the right justice. I'd heard the old tales of the horrors lurking deep inside the forests, but never experienced them face to face. It was still, lying dead as the fallen leaves beneath it. It looked crushed and broken, littered with what seemed to be deep, wide puncture wounds. Martin managed to speak.
Is it?
But before he could say any more, a sudden snap broke the tension. The snap of a twig. No, a branch. My spine shot straight upright. Against my better judgment, I found my head gradually swiveling in the direction the noise had come from. When I caught a vast, hulking shape in my peripheral, I whipped around to face whatever was there. I saw it. I saw something just for a moment. Enormous, long limbs draped in shaggy hair, the color of pine bark. But as quickly as I had turned, the image vanished. Rising dread threatened to pry my lips apart in a scream. I looked far and wide, but nothing was there.
Kel, what is it? Wait, the cougar isn't still here, is it?
Martin whispered.
No, it's nothing. Let's keep going. We could talk about this later with my grandpa. But the cat could be still loitering about somewhere. It's best we don't stay in the same place for too long.
Before departing, I snapped a few pictures of the mangled corpse on my phone, zooming in on the head without backtracking to get a better angle. Something told me that turning back, however, briefly, would be a terrible mistake. We went on with urgent pace, pretending to ignore the heavy movements between the trees nearby. Large animals will inevitably give away their movements, but they snap twigs, not entirely branches. Even so, the movements sounded anything but clumsy. No, they sounded calculated, those of a stalking predator. As hard as I tried to filter them out, I caught myself glancing to the sides and behind very often.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't know whether I was hoping to see something or nothing. Still, the woods around us were empty, other than ourselves.
Hey, Kel, if there's a mountain lion around here, we should go up onto the trail a bit. It'll be easier to bolt if we need to.
I agreed, and we veered off to the right, climbing up the roadside slope. Deep down, I knew that whatever was out there, it wasn't a big cat. We only told ourselves that, skirting the subject of monsters now made very real to us. The forest fell silent as we walked along the road. It was far from being comforting, though. If the woods are quiet, predators are about. It's a well-known idea in the community of wilderness enthusiasts. What did ease my mind to a degree was the sight of a herd of deer standing in the track. They cocked their heads to look at us, but didn't seem at all disturbed by our presence. At the same time, a feeling of being exposed, vulnerable, grew as a hard lump in my gut. They started to move on as we got closer, wandering off the road and into the woods. One of the deer stayed in place. It wasn't frozen, no, but constricted. It twitched and whimpered as it started to rise off of the ground as if weightless. It happened so quickly. Its screams were cut off as its limbs were snapped and crushed. The deep wounds erupted over its body. And then, like it had been there the whole time, it stood. It was a nightmare. Huge, unimaginably so, rivaling two elephants stacked up. It was hunched over, resting on impossibly long and thick forelimbs ending in spindly sloth-like claws. Its body was long too, ending in a pair of shorter legs, knees inverted with feet supported by spur-like appendages. The lolling head that sat atop an arched neck looked like some bizarre cross between a horse and a crocodile. Hollow pits in place of eyes, the torn skin around its mouth revealing horribly uneven and misshapen teeth that jutted out at irregular angles. The fading sunlight glinted off the long gashes covering its sides and head. The dead creature from earlier had definitely put up a fight, but it could never have been enough. As we stood stunned, it reciprocated our stare, the only real movements being the set of rib-like appendages undulating on its underside, rendering the deer into a torn sack of flesh and bone fragments. The poor animal seemed to wither before our eyes as the sharp ribs forced deeper into its body like a juice box having the last drops sucked out of it. In that moment, we were part of the herd, paralyzed. Some had already run off, but others were as statues in the presence of this beast. Another smell hit us then, different from the stench of the decay like earlier, but equally sickening. Like moist earth, sulfur, methane, and dead fish. Its source was clear as wisps of gas from the beast's mouth became thick, billowing fumes rising into the evening sky. The tension was broken with the deer's mutilated husk thudding to the ground. The remaining deer took flight, scampering off into the trees, and in response to the beast snapped its head to their direction. Something was wrong with its head, flopping around clumsily as it turned. I took a step back as it let out a deep guttural rattle before bounding off after the herd, its matted hair swinging violently. It splintered a tree as it went, but was totally unfazed by the impact. We waited until its thundering gallops faded into the quickly darkening night before saying anything.
What the F? What was that thing?
Martin sputtered, tears welling up in his eyes.
I don't know, man, but we have to get to the house before sundown. I have a feeling our chances at escaping it are little to none in the dark.
Are you crazy? We have to go back. I want to get as far from this place as
What about my grandpa? We can't just leave him here with that thing.
Martin didn't look over at me, but wasted no time disagreeing, starting his jog up the road. We were already over halfway to my grandpa's house, and even if we wanted to escape, it would be a mental task for the creature to smash the Jeep off-road. The solitary light in the distance took like the gates of heaven. It radiated safety, but I knew we couldn't continue out in the open, completely exposed. I looked down to my utility watch, making a mental note of the direction of the house, north, northeast, before grabbing Martin by the arm and leading him off to the left of the road. Nature's cruel irony manifested in the steeping terrain and the thickening brush. The house's light quickly faded, leaving us with only our bearings to navigate. I thought we might have gone off track for a terrifying moment, but I saw the column of smoke above the distant tree canopy that could only be from my grandpa's chimney.
Come on, this way!
As we neared, no light became apparent. Maybe he had already gone to bed. I could only guess with his lack of communication. We came up onto the lip of a hill, sloping downwards towards the flat clearing. But there was no house. There, the pillar of smoke. But there was no source. It began in mid-air from nothing. As we stopped to look, the point where the smoke came from jerked around in the air. When I picked up the organic stench, it clicked in my mind. Just like before, there it was, looking directly at us, the thick fumes spewing from its mouth. But I noticed something else this time. Now that the moon hung in the sky, its light glinted off something beneath the creature's head. Six black orbs, shiny like obsidian, three on either side of its neck. They darted about, independent of each other, and I knew immediately what they were. Eyes. What kind of abomination was this? If those were its eyes, and it ate the deer with that structure resembling a ribcage, then that must mean it had a false head. A distraction defense mechanism, maybe. It made sense how its head flopped around limply with the beast's unnatural movements. I blinked in quick succession and looked down to my watch. Due east. We had been misled. It had circled around us to lie in wait. In one motion, I gripped onto Martin's shoulder and pulled him in the direction we were meant to be heading in a wild sprint for survival. The beast erupted into movement, ribs rippling as it let out another rumbling trill. Martin looked over to me, confused.
Hey, dude, what are you doing? There's nothing,
Shut up. Just run as fast as frickin' possible now. Don't stop for anything.
Our pounding feet were matched by heavy thumps and loud cracks of trees being smashed. I dared not steal a glance behind, fearing that even the slightest break in pace would mean death.
There!
I struggled to see what Martin was talking about until the yellow light became visible between the tree trunks. We were only a few hundred yards away, but I was surprised the creature hadn't already caught up to us. Even the trees in its way stood no chance at impeding it. It had almost caught up. I could feel the air pressure from its massive body charging through the trees behind. Close enough that, at any moment, I might feel its claws cleave my body into pieces. A saving grace. Coming up on our left was a dense patch of old oak trees. I swerved towards them, leaping through the spaces between trunks, just large enough for us to get through. I hit the ground, rolling sideways. There wasn't even time to be dazed as the immense slam sounding from where we had just been. I scrambled backwards, looking to see a great arm slinking through the gap. It was thick, but not as thick as the oaks. The claws tapping about, searching blindly for our frail bodies. "Go!" I shouted, and the both of us shot to our feet and bolted towards the light. As we ran, the sounds grew distant. Was it stunned, or did it still think we were behind those trees? I didn't care. All that mattered was being inside and not out. Gravel clattered against the front of the house as we skidded to a stop. I rapped on the door, devolving into pounding when they went unheard. On what was probably the 20th knock, my fist met only air, and I stumbled in through the now open doorway. I looked up to meet my grandpa's gaze. His eyes were wild. He didn't look like himself. He glanced behind me at Martin, then behind him. Whatever he saw out there, his pupils contracted in response.
"Hurry up, boys! Get inside!"
he whisper shouted. We filed in, and he went to bolt the door, but hesitated. His hand fell limply.
No use!"
He was right. If the beast wanted to pay a visit, it would do so regardless of our home security. We followed him quietly to an uncovered floor hatch.
"What's this, Mr. Bennett?" Martin asked, regarding the hatch.
"Huh? Oh, this here's my old wine cellar."
Martin tried to ask further before being interrupted.
Get down the ladder first, son. You can shoot your questions once we're safe."
He pulled on a handle, opening the hatch to reveal a sturdy wooden ladder that led him into a dim space beneath. One by one, we clambered down its dusty rungs, meeting the cold concrete floor at the bottom. Grandpa was last, tugging a heavy rug over the open hatch before closing and securing it.
"I take it you've seen the thing, right?"
"Jesus, Granddad, we barely got away," I gasped, still out of breath from our escape.
"Unscathed?"
"Yeah, mostly, other than some scratches."
"Good."
He walked over to an upturned crate and plopped down onto it. Martin and I looked between each other, then back at him.
Well, Martin said. "You seem to know what we're dealing with, so what the hell is it?"
Grandpa gave Martin a scowl of disapproval, quickly relenting into understanding.
"I'd scrutinize you on your manners, boy, but now ain't the time."
He released a tired gasp, letting his head drop down before inhaling sharply and looking back up at us.
"I've seen it only once before in my varsity years. Had some Danish friends on my course who said I should come visit them over there, go and do some backpacking in their home country. Beautiful landscapes over in Denmark, really. Peaks rising out the trees, you know?"
Before he could lose himself in a daydream, I cleared my throat to bring him back to reality.
"Oh, right. So, we were pretty deep in the woods when it happened. We all got paranoid because we thought something was following us. Something big, elk maybe. But we never saw nothing, only heard it. And then, God, only one of the girls in front of me started to, levitate. I don't know. She was just rising up off the ground, gripped by something. Whatever it was making a mess from her. Crunched her up like a meatball being squeezed. I saw it then. Curved bones wrapping around her, stabbing in deep. Ain't never gonna forget the sight of it. It's like a stain on my mind.
We saw the same thing, Martin piped in. Only it was a deer. Looked like it sucked everything out of it when it was done.
Yeah, I can't say I know how it works. You can only see it if you know something's there, if it's there. Anyways, we ran as fast as we could back down the trail, and we seemed to lose it. The whole time, there was this rancid stink, though, eggy and earthy. Ugh. We wound up back at the town we had started from, went straight to the police station and reported it. Apparently all they found was a little chunk of meat, piece of thigh or something like that. One of the other guys told me about the tale later on. He brought up the smoke we saw rising from the forest when they were back in the town. An old Danish legend went that people went through history seeing smoke columns in the woods, and most who went to check it out had never returned. They said it would move around, not like how a fire would spread, but like it was wandering to and from.
Damn, that's a horrible story, Grandpa, I said. It doesn't help us figure out what it is, though. We already know the stuff you've just told us.
Well, he replied, I'm sure it's got many names, seeing how it could just pop up when it likes. But I only heard it called Skorskindir. Means chimney beast, if I'm remembering right.
That makes sense. We thought we were seeing the smoke from your chimney, but it led us right to it.
Kel, Grandpa sighed. This house ain't even got a chimney.
Martin looked over at me, scuffing, then back over at Grandpa.
So it lures people in like that.
Sure, but I don't think it means to.
I'm gonna take a gander and say it started up with the fumes after it ate that deer.
Yeah, I replied.
Whatever that thing is, it ain't from here. It ain't from anywhere on the planet, I think. It eats something, then starts giving off smoke. Waste product from digesting, I guess.
So, shit gas? Martin chuckled. He was always able to find a way to lighten the mood in dire situations, even if just a little. I looked up at the monochrome ceiling above us, mulling over what Grandpa had said. I remembered how this whole thing had started, and pulled out my phone to bring up the photos. We found this after starting our way up to yours on foot. I have an inkling, but do you know what it is? Grandpa squinted at the screen, then took it from my hand. Scroll to the right. That's only the head, I said. His silent focus was only punctured by the dull taps of his finger on the screen. Recognition lit up in his eyes, his head bobbing up and down.
Well, I'll be damned.
Wendigo, right? I asked.
Yep. I gotta say, never saw one around these parts before. But then again, I was never looking for one. I doubt you heard it, but keep that as a reminder of what this beast is capable of.
I put my phone back into my pocket, sighing and letting my chin drop into my hands. In any other situation, I'd be shocked to find out a creature was real, but not now.
This is all great, Mr. Barnett, Martin said with a quivering uncertainty. But it doesn't help us. What are we going to do? What can we do?
I don't know. Well, I have a stupid idea, but it's just grasping at straws.
Anything over sitting here and waiting to die, Martin breathed, staring off into space.
Anything.
Grandpa looked up towards the basement window, the only source of natural light in the room, what little of it remained.
Well, I was checking my traps out east from here, about 600-700 yards into the woods. Only when I got there was this smudge. I don't know what to call it, but that's the best I can describe what it looked like. It was like looking into it, I couldn't register what I was looking at. Hurt my eyes after a while. Never seen nothing like it. Was after that I started seeing that scorched earth, so...
He trailed off, like he was struggling to find the words to say.
So what? I pressed, leaning forward in anticipation. Again, this is guesswork, but I think that's where it came out from. I threw a rock into it when I was there, but I ain't heard it hit the ground. Like it went someplace else. If we could just leave it back there, maybe get it to go back in.
Wait, hold on, I interrupted. Shouldn't we just call someone, police, the damn army?
What do you think would happen if the cops came out here, huh? What's a chief and a rookie in one police car going to be able to pull up against it? And good luck convincing the U.S. military to send out the Marines. You'd be lucky if they thought it was a joke.
I shut my mouth, swallowing my next words, allowing Grandpa to continue with his proposition.
Either the beast leaves or we die. I'm not even going to talk about trying to drive away. You've seen what it does to the trees. Stealth might work, but it's better at that than we are. Big as it is, I don't want to risk either of you losing your lives.
His last remark sent a chill down my spine. He had said nothing explicitly, but I already began to understand what he meant.
Granddad, you...
Don't worry about me, champ. I got something, but you gotta listen closely, both of you.
Martin and I set our full attention on him. I wanted to hear his plan, but I really hoped it was gonna go a different way from what I was thinking.
Now I wanna make this clear before anything. I'm going alone, and you boys need to sit tight and do as I say.
My heart dropped, plunging into the stone-cold sea of despair.
Are you crazy? No, I have to go with you.
Grandpa cut me off, shushing me.
As I say,
he commanded. I knew he was right, but in the face of loss, my thoughts wrestled against the idea.
Okay, now I'm gonna call you when I'm a ways off, all right? You have to pick up and stay on the call with me. It's vital you keep your attention on my voice. I need both of y'all to be brave for the next part. I need you to make as much noise as you can.
Martin's eyes bulged in fear.
Won't that just get us killed?
I haven't finished. That's only up until I call you. When I do, you shut up, and then you hide in the darkest corner of this cellar, okay?
I was heaving for breath now, cold beads of sweat budding on my forehead. But I closed my eyes and stilled myself.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Once we're connected, I'll start.
We were silenced by a single muffled thump from overhead, so forceful that the ceiling spewed cement dust down on us. Then another thump, and another, and another. I fell off my perch in shock when a booming crash sounded from above, chased by the clattering of rumble. The steady thuds drew nearer, louder, until the only sound was that of the floorboards groaning under immense weight. I looked over to Grandpa, who looked over to me and whipped a finger to his lips. I nodded, then slowly turned towards the basement hatch. The beast was trying its best to move silently. A stifled whimper escaped my lungs as I saw the hatch buckle. A loud bang shook the house's foundations, then nothing. In the silence, I could make out the beast's ticking growl. It was toying with us, trying to catch us out, make us think we had been foiled so we'd burst out in a panic and try to flee. Its intelligence terrified me so much more than its grotesque appearance. It tried this bait a few times more before huffing angrily. The heavy creaks grew distant until we could no longer hear it, aside from the single crash of a fallen tree somewhere outside. I stood up, eager to set this plan into motion, only to be dragged back down by a firm grip on my arms. My eyes fell to meet my grandpa's, looking up at me with a wide-eyed scowl.
"Sit down," he hissed. "Not yet. Bastard's clever. It's probably waiting at the tree line, watching for us to come out."
The three of us sat in silence, ears attuned for even the slightest noise to indicate its presence. After an excruciating wait, Grandpa rose to his feet and crept over to the ladder. He scaled it, wincing at the creak of a rung, then pushed open the hatch ever so slowly. The rung that had been above was tattered, torn fragments slipping down into the now open space. He peeked out from side to side, checking rigorously that we were safe. As he pressed his hand upward, what sounded like a broken tile was disturbed, clattering to the floor above us. Grandpa froze in place, visibly tensing.
Creak!
The heavy step, followed by the guttural rattle I prayed the god I wouldn't hear, forced Grandpa into action. He pushed himself off of the ladder, tucking and rolling to the floor, right before the latch was slammed by immense force, cracking it and warping the hinges. Grandpa shot to his feet, adrenaline far outpacing his old age. He glanced around wildly at the floor before looking down at us with newfound determination.
"Ah, shit, damn it! Change of plans! Martin, distract it! Make some noise, Kale! Give me a leg up on the window!"
Martin's jaw fell open and his breathing quickened.
"Come get it, you mother fudger! You ugly sack of shit!"
While Martin was busy cussing out the chimney beast, Grandpa and I hurried over to the window and braced myself in a kneel, fingers locked together, forming a foothold where he planted a foot.
"One, two, three!"
I heaved him up, holding my posture while he unlatched and swung the window open. My body was already tired from running away, and Grandpa was heavier than he looked. Still, I hauled him up further until he was out past the waist, and he pulled himself out into the hazy night. I kept my focus on him as he turned around, refusing the urge to look as I heard claws cleaving away ravenously.
"All right, I'll be calling in a minute," he panted. "When I do, tell Martin to zip. I love you, bud."
"You too, Granddad."
My words latched onto him, feeling a forgotten instinct that slammed his heels into the forest floor and sent him sprinting into the trees, fading until he was merged with the dark itself. I grounded again when Martin let out a shriek, and I turned to see him backpedaling from the spindly claws extending through the jagged hole that once was a hatch. A thick trail of blood smeared from him as he shifted back, the same crimson that slicked one of the titanic claws.
"It cut me! Oh god, it hurts!"
he cried, flipping over and resorting to a belly crawl towards me. I rushed over and dragged him as far away as I could, but he flopped to the floor in shock when he refused my grip. His calf was a mess of exposed, glistened flesh and bone, sliced through like warm butter. His mouth hung half open, but without a sound, so I rushed to build a cacophony in his place. As booming as I tried to make myself sound, I devolved into whimpering shouts. The beast's arm had reached almost halfway across the room, yet still it slithered further and further through the broken hatch, claws tick-tocking around in search of our flesh. Backed up into the farthest corner alongside Martin, the monster's hand grew closer, slowly, agonizingly so. I only came aware of the incoming call from the vibration in my jacket pocket. It felt as if, somehow, safety laid in the act of answering my grandpa's call. My hand shot into my pocket and yanked the phone out, fumbling with the touchscreen and picking it up.
Granddad? It's so close. It's about to get us. Do something, please.
I wailed into the phone. Instead of a reply, a loud crack rang through the night, and then the phone. The beast's arm lurched backwards, freezing for a moment, before it tore out from the basement, peppering the floor with wooden fragments. As simple a sound it was, I recognized it. His Blackhawk. He had taken it with him. I don't know when he picked it up. He may have had it on him the entire time. Out the window, I saw the hulking silhouette barrel into the trees at speeds raveling my Jeep in fifth. I jumped when I heard Grandpa abruptly begin shouting over the call. The words were indiscernible, blending in with the scuffing sounds of movement. I took that moment to take off my jacket, then my t-shirt, which I pulled tightly around Martin's upper calf as a tourniquet.
"Hey, Kale," Grandpa said on the phone, sounding hollow and tiny. "Make sure you keep up with your aerobics. It sure as shit don't get easier with the years."
I let out a half-hearted chuckle. "I will. I want to go hiking through these woods with you, camping, surviving off the hunt."
"I know you do. God, I do too,"
he said, stifling a sob.
"You're gonna have to stay strong for your ma, okay? There ain't no chance I'm getting out of this, but you two are."
I broke down then, thick watery streams lining my cheeks.
"I'm gonna miss you so much, Granddad."
"Hey, but didn't we have some good times? Amazing times, no? I sure as hell did. And well, this is pretty badass the way to go out, right?"
An unfamiliar comfort swelled up inside me, almost breaking through the tears.
"Yeah.
All right, I'm here. The smudge. No idea what I'll find through there."
I could hear the thundering beast across the call as it gained on him, its clicks and rattles too.
"I'm going in. Promise me one thing, though."
"Anything, Granddad."
"Hell, you be good, kid, and make my daughter proud, that's all."
A bizarre noise came from the phone speaker, something akin to the sound of a stone sliding across a frozen lake, followed by a splash that seemed to kill all noise. That dead silence was broken when a shuddering voice spoke again through the phone.
"What the?
Where are you?"
I yelled, pleading for any small morsel of information he could provide.
"I don't know. I'm in a pipe, I think. Some kind of glass tube. I can see everything outside. It's all there, all at once. There's more of these tubes, so many more. They're branching and splitting, but..."
The connection got progressively weaker as he talked, jittering and buzzing in my ears.
"I'm heading down this tube now, and there... central one, but it's huge, enormous, holy shit! No, I don't think it's the central. In the distance, so many. The hell is this place?"
My exhausted brain couldn't fathom a single thing he said. Just listened, almost as confused as he was.
"Streams of, through some of them, and the..."
He was cut off by a tremendous splash. But the sound quality at this point made it sound more like a roar. I could only hear his whimpers until that hissing trill crawled its way under my skin once more. It melded with the audio glitches. But then, I heard something I could never have expected, even after everything I had seen. It sounded as if the creature was stuttering, clearing its throat before.
"The squirt world, for it flows, shows us the path."
It spoke. The unearthly nightmare beast had spoken. Its words were jarring, like it was repeating after someone taught it how to speak, broken by animalistic clicks and hisses. Grandpa screamed, but the call lost connection completely and drew it out as a high siren wave tone. My hands acted on its own accord and loosened its grip, sending the phone clattering to the floor. By the time I had crouched down to grab it, only my home screen greeted me as I pressed the home button. Call failed. I looked down to Martin. He was out cold, but breathing. The blood had died down, but he needed urgent treatment. Even so, I fell to the floor, back sloshed up against the cold concrete wall, and decided to wait it out until sunrise. I was certain Grandpa's plan worked, but just in the slightest uncertainty held me in place. The adrenaline was beginning to wear off. My limbs ached, head thumping. I fought against my eyelids, but they fell as if they were being dragged down by anchors. All light vanished, and I faded into sleep. I woke to heat on my face and a red-orange blur, grimacing at the rays of sunlight that poured through the destroyed basement hatch directly on my face. Any notion of a simple nightmare was shattered. Martin. I rolled over on my side, seeing him laying a few feet away. Thank God, he was still breathing. The blood coating the skin of his left leg was dried and crushed, but a small amount of it still seeped from his mangled limb. I chose to let him rest while I turned to the broken ladder, hauling myself up of what remained of its rungs and out into the house, what remained of it at least. Utter devastation. I do not exaggerate when I say almost the entire front portion of the house was gone. Wooden beams jutted out from the piles of rubble and dust, but all was still. Unlike the day prior, birdsong weaved throughout the woods and into the ruins. I recall hearing about how forest animals will go quiet when a predator is nearby, but I had been too on edge to notice until the sounds had returned. Still, subtle chills warmed their way up my spine. I felt safe, but also felt safe with Grandpa in the basement until the attack. No smoke plumed from anywhere across the tree line, and no stench defied my nose, but I still couldn't shake it. I spent the time scrambling around in the back half of the house that still stood. Quicker than expected, I found the keys to my Grandpa's truck in the corner of the kitchen counter. I practically leaped down the old wine cellar that slowed my pace, gently shaking Martin until he stirred. He was groggy and confused.
Don't worry, man. I'm gonna get you home.
I wrapped his left arm over my shoulder, supporting him to the ladder. It was tough getting him out, but I did, and we hobbled through the ruins to the truck. Driving faster than truly necessary, I swerved, slamming on the brakes when the fallen tree trunks came into view almost out of nowhere. The jolt shook Martin, and he came to attention from the pain in his leg. I apologized for it, but wasted no time in getting out and helping Martin down from his seat. The stench of death was stronger in the air, the Wendigo corpse festering nearby. It brought me back to the night before. The raw terror, spine paranoia within me that grew intense over the short walk between the truck and my Jeep. I felt exposed. Naked. We made it across the trees and into my Jeep quickly, even with Martin's injury. Still, without any warning signs of the beast, my heart was drumming so hard I could see my chest pulse. After a messy three-point turn, the wheels slipped, kicking up dust before we shot away down the track. We drove until we reached the small police station, where I flew out of the Jeep and bursted through its double doors. Perhaps a rash action in retrospect, but my mind was elsewhere. Before anything else, I had them call an ambulance for my friend, followed by reporting a severe animal attack. When I was asked what attacked us, I spat out, "Cougar." The officer grunted, and I laid out the facts. Grandpa was gone, dragged away by our assailant. An ambulance arrived soon thereafter to pick up Martin. The EMTs were visibly surprised by the laceration, but attended to him nonetheless. He had lost a fair bit of blood, but they quickly got him in stable condition at the nearest hospital, where he stayed for the next week. A search party banded together to look for Grandpa, but they found nothing, of course. I was questioned about the state of his house, but I think the trauma welling up in my eyes was the best defense I could have had. No scorch marks on the rubble to indicate explosives. Nothing. It's been a few years since this all happened, and I've made it through the stages of grief in one piece. I like to say Grandpa lives on in my memory, but that wouldn't be entirely accurate to say. I could still remember him, our conversations, days out, the smell of his fireplace, all that. But no matter how hard I try, I can't remember what he looked like. That's to say, there's only an imperceptible smudge where he once was in any pictures I still have. I don't know where he ended up, some massive network of tubes, but I get the distinct impression that his grave lies elsewhere, in another place separate from this world. I'm entirely grateful for his sacrifice, yeah, but I can't think that it was only our lives that were saved from this thing. Are there more of them? Or is it somehow able to relocate itself? Only my grandpa would have answers, but yeah. Just in case, if you find yourself out in the wilderness and you see a steamy plume of smoke rising from the trees, perhaps even the smell of organic stench of digestion, it's best to call off the occasion entirely. Once it's on to you, well, I only hope you're as lucky as we were on the day my grandpa died. It was a Saturday morning when we had gone hunting for Bigfoot. The sky was overcast and gray, matching my mood perfectly until we pulled over on the side of the old highway. The moment I popped the trunk and slid my hand over the wooden stock of my grandfather's rifle, though, my focus returned. I cocked the gun in sync with the spark of rage that flared within the depths of my belly. I looked at my brother, Darren, who had also taken his weapon in hand, though was noticeably lesser intent. "Come on, Darren, enough sulking. You know what we need to do."
Yeah, I know."
He slammed the trunk shut and slung his bag over his right shoulder, keeping the rifle in both hands as he trudged past me into the woods.
"Let's just get this over with."
His exasperation was on full display. It sickened me. I simply followed along, having nothing left to say. Our boots squished into the softened surface of the forest floor, following the ATV trail deeper into the wild. The smell of wet grass and rotting logs was overwhelming, only to become sickening once it meshed with the stink of the swamp. But the smell would not deter us. We found the swamp's edge, keeping the water to our right. Our eyes, however, were constantly surveying the area, searching for any signs of the ancient ape, or perhaps signs of its victims. There wouldn't be anything left of Dad. We had already been out here countless times before, ever since the creature had taken him. Darren still refuses to believe his brother, let alone his own eyes, but I knew what we had seen that day. A dad taking his two preteen sons on a fishing trip, having great fun in the sun. It was the first time I had ever actually caught anything, which was still better than how Darren was doing. At one point, my kid brother started crying after one fish broke his line, and Dad had to console him. And as he did that, the shadow came. I watched it approach from its cover amongst the tree line, slow but steadily. When I pointed it out to him, Dad took a quick look before telling us to start walking away from the bear, backwards with care. We all had our eyes on the shadow, so we all were able to see when it dropped to all fours and began sprinting for us. Dad told us to run back to the car as he pulled out his pocket knife, trying to stand as tall and as wide as he could to scare it off.
Darren was crying in fear, so I had to pull him away, but that didn't stop me from watching. Soon enough, the beast was in front of my father and backstanding on two legs. And it sure as hell wasn't a bear. If anything, it was a roided out gorilla that hadn't skipped leg day. It blotted out the sun with its stature, looming several feet over our dad. Darren and I had gotten to safe distance where the beast didn't see us, but I sure could see them. I wanted to cry for Dad to run, to scream at him to get out of there, but my throat closed up, choked by fear as I watched him stumbling back. The knife dropped out of his hand, and the monster roared in his face, revealing a set of flesh-ripping fangs. After that, my eyes were transfixed on the monster beating my father into a bloodied pulp, unable to avert my own gaze. It swung his body around wildly, slamming my father against a tree and rock and ground alike. I would have assumed that the thing was using my dad as a plaything if it hadn't been for the pure feeling of rage that it exuded, even to us up on the hill. My throat finally began to muster some small short cries as I witnessed the beast dragging the corpse back to whatever hellhole it called its home. I distinctly remember the size of its hand, almost large enough to wrap around the entire length of my father's lower leg. The only leg that was left, anyways. A good while after my dad had disappeared, I led Darren back to the car, and with snot and tears dribbling over the screen, I called Mom. I was finally able to utter something that resembled a word. Help! The police found the leg that the beast tore off a few days later, floating up in the swamp. And the footprints fit the proportions too, but the police ruled it out that we had just seen a bear attack, and that the footprint size was due to the bear's paws spreading out in the mud. I didn't buy it. I never would. And now, as a grown man, I return to these woods every weekend to get revenge. Looking down at the ground, I stopped dead in my tracks. Darren, over here! My younger brother came sprinting back to me as I grinned and pointed, the same enormous footprints we had only seen on a few occasions.
What did I tell you?
Jacob, those are the same prints from before. We've been over this. Those are...
Don't you say it again, I growled. Darren was far more willing to just conform to whatever the nice police officers told him because it was easier to listen. It was easier to just pretend that what had happened was something normal, and not that our father being murdered by a Sasquatch. Did you see the pattern of the pads? No, this is not a bear's foot, and it ain't one of our boots. That there, that's the footprint of our Bigfoot.
Darren just sighed and stood up.
Come on, let's just lay the traps already, and you're on the first watch. It's way too early for me to deal with your crazy mess.
Grumbling, I pulled my pack off and ruffled through its contents until I found the jaws. In one swift and heavy motion, I tossed my bag over towards my brother, which contained our leg traps. He cried out as the steel slammed against his shin.
Ow! What's wrong with you?
Darren was always an infant. Weak. It was for that very reason I dragged him out here every weekend, hoping that seeing the beast and confronting it would make him a toughen up and finally give us the closure we desperately needed.
Hey, you asked for them.
A rumble sounded through the trees. We both instantly grabbed our rifles and began scanning our surroundings, trying to catch any kind of movement. Plap. My guard only began to lower as a raindrop crashed into the right lens of my glasses, warping half of my vision heavily.
Just thunder,
I murmured, putting my rifle down to clean my glasses. Prep the traps and come back over here quickly. We'll only be out here for a little bit today, I guess. Darren just groaned and snatched up the trap, storming away from me. With my vision fixed, for the moment, I inspected my rifle and began to load it. If we were going to come across Bigfoot today, it would have to be soon. It wouldn't be caught wandering around in a storm.
The creature was smarter than that. I watched as Darren's figure grew hidden amongst the thin trees, wandering along our pre-established boundaries to set up traps. Today we were trying cow cleavers as bait. We had been rotating the meat to see if any of them would be a better chance of attracting it. Darren thought it was just an expensive waste, but after just trying venison for 2 years straight with no results, something needed to change. By the time Darren had returned to our lookout spot, a thin mist had begun to fill the forest. The cold pierced through my sweater, so I was forced to zip up my puffer coat to keep warm. When he arrived, he tossed my bag back at me and plunked himself down with his back turned to mine. I could hear the crinkling of his morning breakfast bar and groaned.
"You should be ready to kill that thing at any moment, not snacking."
"You're completely deluded, you know that?"
I didn't bother responding. Darren's mind was all made up at this point, and no amount of convincing or conversation would change it. Only the stone-cold corpse of a Sasquatch would make him see the truth now. For a moment, I wondered what Sasquatch meat would taste like to myself. The rumblings of the thunder grew more consistent, and the mist had thickened as we sat and waited. I was constantly having to wipe my glasses clean to remain vigilant, now blinded from water and fogging alike. After a little while, it was my turn to check on the traps. Brushing off the mud and leaves, I trotted through the brush, checking all the traps' positions. And per usual, Darren had completely mucked up all the placements. The lazy prick. So it was left to me to adjust them, moving them to spots that were slightly more hidden, so it wasn't blatantly obvious to the beast that he was being hunted. Muttering under my breath, I fixed each trap and just moved on, until the fourth trap of five. The cow lever was not there, but the trap was not closed shut, and the mud around the area was stomped and squished in various ways. The tingle of anticipation began to hurry my heartbeat, and I just stared at the device before calling out to Darren.
"Hey Darren, you put livers on all the traps, yeah?"
Yes, Jake. I don't need your..."
Thunder rolled again, but I had heard enough from my brother to get my answer. I began to make my way back towards our outpost, walking backwards at first and surveying my surroundings. Once I was certain no eyes were watching me from beyond my view, I raced back to my brother and slid back beside him. Darren began shouting at me and demanding to know what was wrong, but I shushed him quickly.
"Something took the liver on trap four," I whispered, trying to hide my excitement and fear.
"So? It could have been some hungry bear for all we know, or a coyote, or whatever kind of animal amongst the hundreds that live in the woods."
Darren was expressing annoyance with me, but he too was whispering. He had to, in part, believe that something was out there. I ignored his sentiments and grinned.
"We gotta set up the tarp. We ain't going anywhere."
We always made our site near a trio of young trees, shaped with a triangle, so we could easily create a tarp roof if the weather was not in our favor. And with the way the rain was beginning to cut through the fog, we decided to do just that. Beneath the tarp, we continued our watch as water poured down before our eyes. Darren continued to whine that we should just leave before we got struck by lightning, but I refused. The missing meat from the trap was already a sign that we needed to stay. In all of our times out here, only twice before the meat had been taken, and both times the trap had been shut. But we had never caught anything actually stuck in the traps. The beast mocked us, taunting us, wanting us to know that it was not just some random creature of the woods. It was greater than that. Time passed. The sky boomed above us. I gave myself but a moment to imagine that we were soldiers in Vietnam, hunkering down in the rain, but staying awake in case of a sudden enemy attack. I was pulled from my thoughts by a hand on my shoulder. Whipping my head around, I saw Darren starting to get up.
"I need to stretch my legs. Gonna go check on the traps."
He started to leave, but turned back to look at me.
We really should be going soon. The weather is awful.
I shook my head without a word. Darren opened his mouth to say something else, but gave up and left. Huddling with my rifle, I shivered profusely in my cold, wet clothing. My hand was nearly frozen in place, clasped around the barrel. I could feel my knuckles locking up in their sockets.
Crash!
The crack of lightning erupted nearby. I witnessed the flash from between the trees. The rain began to fall faster, hitting the leafy forest floor like bullets from the heavens. I could feel my senses all begin to be overwhelmed by the sensations of the wild.
Ah!
A scream. I pivoted in its direction and readied my rifle. It sounded like Darren, but I couldn't see him between the rain and my fogged glasses. I wiped them off quickly, then looked again. There. It was still blurry, but there was no denying it. A large black figure raising its hands above its head and slamming down into the ground, attacking my poor brother, who was likely being beaten on the ground by it, out of my sight. I was not going to let Bigfoot take another member of my family. The rage was ignited. I ripped a bullet off my belt and slammed it into the chamber, then shoved the bolt forward and took my aim. The beast was still slamming at the ground. Maybe the trap had caught it in place. There was no time to waste. The crosshairs were aligned at its chest. I pulled the trigger without hesitation. The gunshot echoed through the trees, louder than any thunderbolt had previously. And the bullet was a direct hit. I watched with wide eyes as the Sasquatch fell, clutching its chest before crumbling slowly to the ground. I scrambled to my feet, slipping and tripping in the mud and grass. My fingers screamed out in pain as I pulled myself past multiple trees, hurting from the cold. I kept the gun close to my side in case the job wasn't done yet. But finally, after all these years, I had finally struck back and avenged my father. I had slain Bigfoot. When I reached the spot where the Sasquatch had fallen over, however, there was no beastly corpse, no massive muddy footprints imprinted in its path. I found only my brother, collapsed face first into the mud, with his blood mixed in with the form of foul sludge beneath his body.
Go on, prove yourself.
The smooth surface of the rifle bruised against my skin. At this point, I say nothing, words being held back like prisoners.
Neo, we don't have all day. What the hell are you doing? Just shoot it like I taught you.
His firm hand travels to my shoulder with a steady grip. I close my eyes and breathe. A smell of pine trees eases my stress while the birds laugh at my fear. The forest stands still around me, yet somehow still speaks words of wisdom and struggle against my gun. My dad's gun, not mine. I swallow before seeing it right before me. A deer, in its mighty glory, guardian of the forest. A sight only seen by the most humble. Its eyes sparkle with innocence, while its horns stretch high to the world beyond me.
Kill it! Kill!
Then one word my dad could say over and over. Every time he would come home with blood on his hands, he let the water wash the guilt off. Except, he didn't feel any guilt. His eyes were only hungry for more. I feel my heart beating faster as sweat from my palms leaves the rifle unsteady.
Aim,
he said as the gun is forced further into my arms. Every word is echoed and adding more pressure. The deer stands lost, unknowing of the danger.
On my mark.
His voice is quiet and low.
One.
The stream nearby runs from the intruders of its land.
Two.
The tree stands tall and still, judging me.
Three.
I think of my mother. She's hungry and hoping, waiting for me to come home. Empty-handed? No. Not for her. So I shoot. And my father drops dead.